WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. And of course, my name is Kevin Tachi. I will be your guide for all of the conversations that we're going to be having this evening that we have every Monday night. We have, as always, a fantastic lineup. I feel as though it's my duty to make sure that the conversations that we have are ones that are important to what's going on here in and around the South Shore, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And of course, for your betterment as the listener of this radio program, whether we have folks who are representatives of organizations that do work with neighboring communities in and around the South Shore, state reps, state senators, folks who represent municipalities, we have it all here on Monday Night Talk. We're actually going to start things off with a reoccurring guest, and that is Mary Waldron. She is the executive director of the Old Colony Planning Council. She's going to join us in just a couple of moments after I give you the rundown. And we're going to talk about a couple of different things. A water study that has been conducted in regards to the South Shore. She'll give us all the details, as I believe last week there was a breakdown on this and there was a discussion about it. Also, as they received Old Colony Planning Council, received a sizable grant. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. What does that money entail and how does that help Old Colony Planning Council and the membership that are part of that organization? Then we are going to turn our attention to AI, that is artificial intelligence. We have a gentleman, Timothy Menard. He's the CEO and founder of LYT. And this is an intelligent connected traffic technology provider that offers a cloud-based platform. And he's going to talk with us a little bit about the difference between good AI and bad AI. And so we'll look forward to how to prevent bad AI, especially when it comes to traffic signals. So we'll talk with Timothy about that. Hour number two, we're going to speak with Adam Bond, attorney Adam Bond, who's going to be offering a class tomorrow night. And this is going to be something that he'll be offering on regular Tuesday nights, and that is life classes, courses on life, mortgages, knowing what to do with mortgages, credit cards, some of the things that folks may or may not understand when you get involved with a contract. Adam is going to be teaching a class on this. This is something that he got the thumbs up from the Board of Selectmen in Middleborough. We'll get all the details, and maybe if you as a listener are interested in attending the class and seeing what the whole hubbub's about, you can do that. And then we're going to close things out. Folks may or may not remember, but it was just a few short days ago. Last week, Patrice Bergeron, number 37 for the Boston Bruins, wears the C on his jersey. He's the captain, decided after 19 years that that's it. Well, we're going to bring the boys in from a couple of weeks ago. We had them on, and we're going to speak with the Causeway Kings, Adam Clancy. And we're also going to speak with Matt Nelson, and we're going to get their take on the Bruins. How the state of the Bruins, Patrice Bergeron, how will this team look come starting the season, the 23-24 NHL season for the Boston Bruins? So stay tuned for all that. But right now, we say hello to our first guest, Mary Waldron. Mary, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Good evening, Kevin. Thank you for having me in Old Colony Planning Council.
How are you doing? I mean, the summer is slipping away. I can't believe that we're just a few short hours of entering the month of August, and I'm like going, where's the summer gone? It's slipped away.
No kidding. Well, between the weather being a large impact, and you know whether it's going to be the smoke from Canada or the heat wave or you know the excessive water, and it has been. Certainly July has been a one for the books. And of course you're talking about sports and Patrice Bergeron has been, you know, gosh, I love hockey and seeing him retire and seeing all these trades going on with the Red Sox. And there's never a dull moment within New England and certainly in Massachusetts.
No, there definitely isn't. And, you know, talking about the weather, you know, one of the things that's an important commodity here on the South Shore, especially when it comes to economic development, when it comes to being able to continue to build and be a thriving community, water is a key component. And I believe that your organization actually is partnering with other organizations on the South Shore to discuss and take a look at the water situation.
We are. And I really want to kind of bring this back a little bit about how this has all been come to this point. But, you know, Joanne Zigman from our staff has been sitting as when she lived in Brockton, she was the Brockton representative to the Central Plymouth County Water District Commission. And that commission reviewed water resources and water usage. And there was always a discussion about how more was needed to evaluate the impact. And so with that, Senator Brady's office, Al DiGirolamo from Senator Brady's office had come, had been on those meetings. And one of those meetings, in fact, were held right here at Old Colony Planning Council that I had the opportunity to sit in. And you listen to those who from across the district, right? Pembroke for a year wasn't able to have access to water. Many of our other communities not being able to turn a faucet on. I mean, the quality of life were and still is at bay for many of our communities and the residents and businesses. So with that, one of the things that when the with COVID hitting and ARPA fundings coming to Massachusetts, one of the things that the legislature did was they created an economic development bill. And in that economic development bill were a whole host of things for many places within our region. But one of the things that Senator Brady had initiated was a $200,000 earmark to go toward the study. And it wasn't the end all because the study, in order for it to be encompassing, independent, it really is, it ends up being very expensive and to hire a consultant. So with that, Joanne Zigman partnered with Don Sullivan, one of our other staff members, our economic development director, and said, well, listen, this is an economic development tool. Water is a quality of life. It also sustains people from, you know, people working in the region, but also sustains the businesses that we have and to grow. So Don with Joanne applied for additional funding from the Economic Development Administration, and we were awarded $490,000 to be matched with all the other funding sources through the county water district, through the Senate. So for a total of $940,000, that is a big number. It is one of the biggest numbers that this region has seen. It is really going to be taking that and hiring consultant, sitting and talking and identifying and working with our communities. It is, again, I could talk forever about this, and I know we've got some time to do this, but that was the initial. The initial was getting the funding. And now we're at a stage where members of each of the towns, the 17 communities that we have, it's really it really is Old Colony Planning Council region. But as I've said before, our resources such as roads, air, water do not stop at borders. And there are many watersheds within the region that are part of this, including the Southeastern Mass Water Resilience Task Force, as well as the Watershed Action Alliance. These are all, again, watersheds you know, it's one comes into another and vital to sustaining, sustaining it being a resource in itself, but also how we are going to be working as a region in addressing this. So how's that for a beginning statement?
Yeah, you really filled in a lot. You filled in a lot of the gaps. You talked about the funding source, the importance of getting that nearly $1 million in grant monies to be able to kind of to do a deep dive, to drill down and find out what's going on. Now, is the idea to kind of take a look at what is available for sources? Is this something for, is there a time, is there kind of a window of time that is being, that was looked at in this study? Like, you know, this is what our water, this is what our water needs are going to be for 2025, 2030, 2035. Was it something in depth like that to say, this is what we're going to have? These are, MWRA might be a resource. The desalination plant that Brockton currently uses and maybe purchasing, that may be a resource, or do we go for aquifers?
It is all the above, and that's a very great question to lead into next. So the idea really is to take the project area, first of all, come up with a steering committee. They're going to facilitate with all the different stakeholders. To your point or your question in terms of the time frame, it's not a 1 year. It can never be a 1 year. It is a 2 year, and this is only the beginning. Again, we are seeing it. You know, you look out your window and you see, you know, where the waters are warming in Florida, right? 100 degrees and killing fish. You're seeing icebergs in the north and melting and causing higher levels. There's a whole host of things. And it's just not, you know, but it really is a science. And it's not just only the climate change. It is all about protecting what is here, such as like the identifying, such as the town of Plymouth has an aquifer that they use and protecting that. What are they currently doing? What do they need? Do they need addition assistance? Do they need more technical assistance? They may be safe. They're all set. But what are the next steps? And it's identifying, doing an inventory, doing, they call it asset mapping and knowing what we have. And that really is a step of the process of hiring the right consultant. It can't be just somebody who has some of the attributes that we're looking for. It has to be a consultant that comes in that has all of it, natural resources as well as how to work with existing communities. So the idea really is getting that request for proposal to hire that consultant. Old Colony Planning Council will be the administrators, like we'll be the conduit for bringing those people that we have day-to-day conversations with, whether it's the DPW, town administrators, or legislators, right? Congressional delegations. So it is to review and establish projections for the future. And we're looking at 25 years plus. We're looking at the water use at the municipal and regional levels. But we're making it clear how much demand is going to be expected if we're going to be bringing on more development and what it may look like. So there's a lot of work that goes behind that. I'm certainly not the person who's capable, but projecting that 25 years. So, right, how do you do that? You take a look at what zoning is allowed for commercial, residential, maybe perhaps protecting, but yet at the same time, right, we're getting a signal from the state because housing is desperately needed. So if we're building housing, what's going to be the demand? And then taking that and really looking at analyzing those where the gaps are and what are going to be the solutions. Is, to your point, is it tying into DSAL? Is it MWRA? It also has to be an element of, you know, reusing water and really kind of making a look of going deep down into technical aspects of water use, but as well as from a municipality's perspective, where do we want to see our growth? And what do we have to do to protect the growth that we want to see? So that's a little bit into that, but go ahead. You have a question.
So my question is so what is next on the punch list? Is it a matter of now? I think you said something about hiring the right consultants. Right. That's in the process. Do you have a target? Do you have a target date to at least to start gathering the needed yes. information and then disseminating it?
So letters just went out last week to members of the, it's an advisory group to who are going to be looking at the RFP, the request for proposal. Right. They're going to design what it's going to be asking for. And those that are on that advisory group, I want them, are really those that have had the funding. So it's going to be the watershed group. It's going to be South Shore Chamber because they made they contributed toward the funding of $45,000 toward this study. It's going to be the legislature, the economic development bill, and the fact that there is support from there, as well as, you know, the Central Plymouth County Water District Commission. It's a small working group. It cannot be 100 people on it. But in the meantime, there's going to be the steering committee, and there's going to be a representative from each of our 17 communities.
Nice.
We've sent messages. We sent communication out to each of the town managers, administrators, mayors, and they are the ones who are designating who's going to be sitting on the steering committee. Project steering committee is really to keep things moving, so it's not just waiting for the person to show up or to run a meeting. It really needs to keep this moving. It's not behind schedule. We're pretty much on target right now. But, you know, the first point is, again, the advisory group to get the RFP. The next group is the steering committee to take a look at those that are going to be applying to make that decision. And then really is the next step is to put out the timeline for when this is going to happen. So my point would be, like, how does the regular citizen of Southeastern Mass want to know what's going on with this group? And it is going to be, we're going to have on our website, we'll have a separate page dedicated just to this project alone, that it will be giving updates, minutes of meetings, and recordings where we're available. We're going to be as transparent as we can, but we also want to make sure that we're all moving in the right direction, so finding where those gaps are.
If you're just tuning in, we're privileged to be speaking with Mary Waldron, Executive Director of the Old Colony Planning Council, talking a little bit about the work going into a water study, an in-depth water study that we're at the very beginning stages of assembling the all-star team to take a look at this situation. For the foreseeable future. We got a few more minutes left with you, Mary, and we look forward to updates. Quickly, if you will, tell folks the website if to keep an eye out on those updates.
It's oldcolonyplanningcouncil.org, and it is filled with, it's pretty much up to date every day. Again, oldcolonyplanning.org. And, you can always reach out. My email is mwaldron@occrpa.org.
If you'll take a moment, it is a little bit of a celebratory. You had members of the federal delegation, meeting up with you, and there was a check presentation. I want to say it looked like $500,000. Can you tell you some grant money that the Old Colony Planning Council was awarded?
We were really excited. We had our staff had been contemplating. It's been a couple of years that Old Colony Planning Council had applied for brownfields funding. And some of that comes with, there's a lot of work that goes into it. But our former employee, Donnie Fuginetti, who's moved on to Mass Development, and Don Sullivan put together an application. And we were amongst a number of people who received $500,000 check for the site assessment. It's going to be, it's a target area for the grant. It's going to be the commuter rail in Hanson, East Bridgewater, Easton, and Whitman. And it's going to be the priority site, including two former manufacturing facilities. If anyone who rides the commuter rail, you see, you know, the industrial use that has been in its past, and former shoe factories and processing plants. So it's really in order for those to come online, back on the tax rolls, be more visually pleasing, but also to deal with the contamination in the ground. The brownfields assessment money is really what's needed, and we're thrilled to be working with our communities in identifying this, and we look forward to seeing additional funding. It was a fun day. It was a hot day out in Worcester on a Friday. A number of our other fellow regional planning agencies received funding, and the nice part about it is this is only the beginning. There is millions of dollars that are available for communities to in fact take these old tired sites and bring them back online.
I mean, how important is it to be able to, you know, do projects like this, to be able to do research, to be able to help communities, you know, member communities, to be able to learn about the footprint that they are on and how to, you know, move forward with betterment, at least do studies before, you know, enacting anything else?
Gosh, you know, I'm Charlie Kilmer and my deputy director and I were just talking about this morning. It's like there's never a day that is the same, and it is never dull. It is always exciting that the public service aspect of what we do, because we are a government entity. We are we're doing, you know, we're the planning for some communities that do not have an economic development director or a planning director. And sometimes it's even just having conversations with town managers and saying, hey, you're not the only ones who's thinking about this. Let's get us all together. It is so satisfying to me and to our staff. You know, we just don't rest our laurels, right? So we work with our communities on green communities and hazard mitigation plans and open space plans and doing road safety audits. And, you know, even some of it has been, since COVID, we now have a tool, a newsletter that comes out twice a month. Of the over 1,000 people that we have subscribed, I've only had 2 people unsubscribed over a 3-year period. And I feel that that is a big win, that we're doing something right. Again, we have to be responsive to the needs of our constituents and of our municipalities. So it really is important to us.
Well, as always, we thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. You're somebody who's always involved with the community, with things that are happening on the South Shore. So any time that we're able to sit down and talk with you, whether it's in person or by phone, is very valuable, especially to the communities here on the South Shore. So again, we thank you, Mary.
Well, Kevin, thank you. And thank you to you and being the spokesperson and bringing all these things that are going on in the region to the listeners, and thank you for having Old Colony Planning Council on.
Anytime. We'll have to make sure that we schedule you sometime in the fall just for an update, just so some of the moving parts that are right now, you know, we may not have talked about them, but they're in action. So we'll definitely have to have you back on either September or October to bring
it.
Excellent. There she is, Mary Waldron, Executive Director of the Old Colony Planning Council, doing work for you, especially if you are one of the member communities that are part of the Old Colony Planning Council. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, I promise, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
There I was in my business suit, all dressed up, just uptight as I could possibly be. And I don't remember much of what was said at that first AA meeting. It was more the feeling of the meeting itself.
What I notice about AA is it sort of helps me to relax and learn to really be happy with my sobriety.
That's exactly what Alcoholics Anonymous does. It teaches us how to live without drinking. It teaches us how to have fun and really enjoy life without drinking.
Visit AA.org for more information and download the Meeting Guide app to find a meeting near you.
It's official. Cars drive themselves before they could fly. That's why it's important that you get your windshield replaced by Tiny & Sons. The computers in these cars need the proper touch. Tiny & Sons has the equipment to recalibrate your windshield right here in Pembroke. I just left there. Deanna said it would take 2 hours. It took an hour. Tiny & Sons. They do a great job.
I'm Peter of Tiny & Sons Glass. All you do is call 1-888-64-TINYS. We come to your work, your home, replace your windshield, improve your view and your disposition. And thank you.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk.
Okay, we are back. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. We want to thank Mary Waldron from Old Colony Planning Council for joining us for a few moments. We shift gears now, figuratively, and joining us, this gentleman is the founder and CEO of Light, L-Y-T, Urban Traffic Solutions. And we're here to talk a little bit about AI, artificial intelligence. How is it, you know, how can you prevent bad AI from taking over, especially we're talking about something like traffic signals? Now, we know that we have to deal with AI when it comes to social media these days and algorithms, and we know that it's been a topic of conversation as of recently, as folks were questioning some AI moves that were taken on by an organization that actually allowed AI to make some moves for their operation. Tim, welcome to Monday Night Talk, and thank you for joining me for this conversation.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me, Kevin.
For folks who don't know, tell us a little bit about yourself, and tell us a little bit about your organization, Light.
Happy to. So first of all, just a little bit about myself. I've been in automotive now for going on close to 15 years. Prior to starting this company, I was at Tesla, where I had a hand in working on Model S, Model X, and the beginnings of Model 3. And then before that, I had some time at a Toyota Research Lab in the San Francisco Bay Area. So have seen a bit of connected vehicles, autonomy, and that's what's kind of paved the way for what we're doing here at Light, where we're building better communities by reducing traffic congestion. We're doing this because of, you know, we see that's possible, that through artificial intelligence that's powered in our cloud traffic management platform that we call Lightspeed, we're able to take all this information that's available in the world today and analyze it. So all these vehicle tracking systems, we can analyze it in real time and send those optimizations to traffic lights so that fire trucks, ambulance, buses, and then the rest of us can all get home or get to where we need to go smoothly and safely.
Now, you recently penned an article in regards to artificial intelligence and trying to give a little bit of a heads up as to, you know, knowing what good and bad AI is. Give us the antithesis for writing this article.
Yeah, you know, we're seeing artificial intelligence be written everywhere. It's coming in more things than we ever expected it. I mean, even our appliances, our washers, our dryers are now shipping with artificial intelligence in it to figure out whether or not your clothes are at the right optimal dryness. And there's so many applications for it, and there's a lot of really big prominent figures that are talking about how if you just let artificial intelligence be the full solution, that we're really in for this doomsday scenario. And so we wanted to pin being an artificial intelligence company where it's a part of our product, but not the full product, that there's a huge difference between if you use it like, right, a hammer. A hammer is really good at knocking nails into wood, but you can weaponize it. And it comes back down to AI. If you keep the right guardrails around artificial intelligence, then you're essentially within that same proper wheelhouse of you're probably using a hammer to nail wood together and build a strong house. And so that's what we're penning there, is that in traffic industry, where everybody is really being bombarded with autonomous cars and seeing what artificial intelligence can do, there's that other side of the coin, which is, well, what is our traffic officials doing? What's our public sector doing? And how is this affecting what decisions they're going to make? Because we all abide by what the government does because we have to.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, again, I mentioned algorithms. I didn't realize that there could be a bias in algorithms. I don't think any of us did. And when, you know, you put something up on social media, a particular platform, and so many of these people may see it, but not these other.
But how can a biased algorithm have an effect when it comes to an AI system?
Well, in the general sense, where you could have a biased algorithm that could be wind up doing the same thing as unfortunately becoming racist. And we've seen this in some of the chatbots. How this relates to something like in traffic is this could become biased to what some people refer to as, you know, what they call like Alexa slang, which means, hey, maybe this is going to bias to the highest bidder, right? This is a public good. So these are the things that people are watching out for, is how quickly can this turn from being an equitable solution to figuring out who gets what.
So I would ask you is how can a bias AI have an effect when it comes to a traffic intersection?
So there's two ways of doing this, and this also winds up in a good and a bad bias. So the bad bias is where it's looking at specific classes of individuals and people and then superseding them just because of maybe a wealth difference or unfortunately a race difference. And so that's the stuff that you want to keep out and lock that out. But there are some good biases, which is maybe you want to be more biased towards public transit. Maybe you want to be even more biased, which we all actually already are as a society, right? We move over for cops. We move over for the fire department. If that was your mom or dad in a bad situation, you'd hope everybody would move out of the way to help you. So there's a good bias in there that works for the community. And that's the stuff we want to strive for.
So what about as far as attempting to eliminate it? Eliminating bias from an AI algorithm, is that possible?
Well, that winds up being able to look at the total whole. So when you have the full window of information of what's going on, and you bring up a really interesting key part, because this is really what happens when you have kind of all knowledge now. When you have all knowledge, it's not really biasism anymore, because you're able to optimize for the whole. So that means, let's use the fire truck example again. In a big city, there's multiple routes. So if there is a way to get people to use the other roads, right? And it's not biased. It's, hey, everybody can go here and here. You can have the same commute and travel time. And then all of a sudden, the ambulance, the police, maybe big trucks can go over here. You can balance the load. And now it's not biased at all anymore. It's hyper-optimized. And that's actually one of the goals of Lyte, is how do we take what has been traditionally different forms of road biasism and turn into hyper optimization. And that's where artificial intelligence can shine, because the world is quite complex. And we as people have been trying to solve this for a very long time.
Again, if you are just tuning in, we are privileged to be speaking with Tim Menard. He is the founder and CEO of Lyte Urban Traffic Solutions, and we're talking about preventing bad artificial intelligence, especially when it comes to something as simple as taking over a traffic signal at an intersection. It's that simple. Do you feel that government can get involved when it comes to bias algorithms in AI? Is that something that can be legislated out, or is it a matter of whoever is installing and managing the algorithm is basically the one who's in control?
Well, let's take a look at a couple of examples where this kind of is a proof point for where the government can do stuff about this in legislation, right? We saw net neutrality. We saw the removal of net neutrality. And that was also, if you look kind of at its root, it's based on biasism. Back to the same point, which is the internet is much like a road system. You can only put so much traffic on it. So at some point, you're going to have to allow, again, for the same digital representation of what's emergency response, what's a fire truck, these certain things. So absolutely.
Okay. So I would ask you, what is it that your company is doing to make sure that you're on top of the bias, any algorithms that are put forth, especially when it's in an AI system?
So it's looking at what is the entire picture, pedestrians, vehicles. We're doing a lot of work right now with transit authorities so that buses can be more timely and reliable, right? Really trying to bring transit back in America because we just have too many cars. And that's only going to get people back on by having this resurgence and renaissance of, hey, here's equitable, reliable, and really cost-effective. I mean, have you seen the price of a transit ticket for those? It's $2, $2.50. You can go anywhere. It's great. Mm. And so when it comes back out where our company and what AI is doing in its biasism is that, well, on the intersection, right, we're all just trading time with each other. There's no way to make all roads infinitely green, right? It's a trade-off. So it's working with our public officials on what is the trade-off. If there's pedestrians there, if it's a high time of movement, maybe it's a downtown core, then it's pedestrians, then buses, and then you know, the single occupancy car, because that's where we are right now in the state of things, is the mobility trade-off.
Can we talk a little bit about, you mentioned earlier, working with other companies who are, you know, leaders when it comes to technology, autonomous cars. I mean, they're teasing that we could see autonomous cars soon and they could be dominating our roadway in the next decade or so. Give me your thoughts on this, especially when we're talking about AI.
Oh, absolutely. So my opinion is that I am in that camp of we're much closer to an autonomous future than one that's far. The advancements that have happened over the last decade are incredible. Even though there's still some ironing out to do, it's phenomenal. I mean, we live in a time where we already have autonomous aviation. And so as we've seen, right, all this stuff filters down. Lots of stuff comes from military, lots of stuff comes from aviation and comes back to automotive and ourselves. And we're now just at that point as to if the car's changing, what else around the car needs to change and how do we need to change as a society to accept. And I think it's going to be like how the iPhone just disrupted the cell phone market, where one moment we all had maybe a flip phone, maybe you had a BlackBerry, you had the first smartphone, and then all of a sudden the first iPhone dropped and it was like, oh, wow, this is neat. This is interesting. And then just like that, we changed entirely to kind of a two marketplace of you have only Android or iPhone as a smartphone. And so I see that we're seeing the incarceration of what Lyft and Uber is already presented and shown the idea that people are willing to accept a rideshare solution. And now, if that's just autonomous, then the cost of that rideshare drops even more, which means people will be even more incentivized.
Let's talk about an organization like yours. If we start seeing more and more integration of autonomous vehicles, what kind of a symbiotic relationship will your organization have with these vehicles on the roadways?
So that comes back down to the optimization of the actual whole. So putting in the needed infrastructure today so that we move away from this kind of greedy, biased, self-centered approach to how we move about the roads to now working in collaboration, cooperation, and are reaching this actual new interesting level of optimization that's never really been able to be provided before.
Anything that I haven't asked you in regards to your article talking about artificial intelligence and you know, bias? I mean, this is like, that was the thing that intrigued me that I wanted to have a conversation with you about, was seeing the word interjected bias, you know, and knowing that it's something that we deal with on every day as human beings. But here it being something that's put into artificial intelligence is yet it's the next level.
To really just hit on this bias some note is that what software has provided and is why it's just disrupting every industry so hard is because it really doesn't have eyes, ears. It's not inherently biased. It's programmed, it's people controlled. And then it's moldable in plastic. So if it can be molded towards a direction, it can be molded back out. So with the conversations happening directly on AI and what its box it needs to be bounded into, just algorithms in general, just how we approach writing software and the applications behind it, we're seeing how fast on a global basis that it doesn't matter
how old you are, doesn't matter what color you are, doesn't matter what sex you are. If you're willing to sit with a computer and work with it, it will work with you, and you will be able to develop something that you could push globally. It could be just as simple as launching your own website. It could be a mobile app. But just the fact that the barrier to entry is the same for everyone.
It's phenomenal. So the last thing I would ask you is that, you know, knowing that you're a guy who's on the technology side of things, you probably have seen a lot more advancements than the general public has. How excited are you for the future with, you know, the troublesome things that we've discussed aside?
You know, there's a lot of things that are doing on behalf of the whole that just doesn't get the attention because of just unfortunate events. And the last 4 years, there's been enough unfortunate events. But there's a lot of good still happening. And it's really going to be a colorful future going forward here in what we're all going to be able to experience and do.
If folks want to find out more about your organization and some of the things that you're working on, maybe it might be a municipality that's tuned in right now. How can they find out more about your company, Light?
They go and check out our website at light.ai. So that's LYT.AI. And then furthermore, we have a LinkedIn page, company page on there. We post pictures, video content, who we're working with and where we're, you know, working with the public sector has got a lot of rewards to it because we're doing the hard work on behalf of the whole. So we're a part of it and we wanted to be a part of the solution and give back.
Well, I want to thank you for being my guest and talking about this. Folks may initially when I had broached the idea and was promoting, you know, my guest at the start of the show and mentioned this, I'm sure people are like, oh, well, why are they having a, you know, someone who is a leader in traffic lights coming on to talk about AI? Well, I think you've done a great job in kind of giving us the ins and outs about this and what to watch for in the future.
It's been a pleasure, Kevin. Thank you.
You got it. Well, that concludes the first hour of Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. We're going to step aside, top of the hour news and more. We have Adam Bond joining us, attorney Adam Bond. You won't want to miss this conversation. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Our number two of Monday Night Talk. Welcome, as we have more conversation for you. It is technically going to be like the hour of Adam, because later this hour, we're going to talk about the retirement of Patrice Bergeron with one gentleman named Adam Clancy and Matt Nelson. That's coming up in a few moments. But right now, we're going to speak with everybody's favorite attorney, new and everybody's now favorite teacher, bring an apple. His name is Adam Bond. He's been on the show before. And we're actually here to talk about something that Adam is going to be introducing. He is actually going to be teaching starting tomorrow night. I believe this is going to be at the Green Schoolhouse in Middleborough. Adam,
Yes. Welcome
to Monday Night Talk.
Thank you. I'm not sure how I feel about being called number two, but other than that, oh, thank you.
So I have to say, is usually when it comes to planning segments and scheduling them, I try to make sure that some of the topics are things that people will enjoy. Maybe they're gonna take a little nugget out of, or maybe it's going to help promote an upcoming event. I think we need to first talk a little bit about this event that you're doing. It's a life skills class. I believe it'll delve into law and critical thinking. First, let's talk about where did the idea for you to be able to teach this class starting tomorrow night?
This has been an idea that's been percolating for several years now, and it started back when I think three school superintendents ago in Middleborough, where I had suggested that, hey, you know, kids need to be taught things like, well, look, every kid that goes out there into the world is either going to have a lease or a mortgage. More likely these days, a lease than a mortgage. But you know, someone needs to teach someone how to read a lease, how to understand what a security deposit is, how to understand what first and last month's rent is, how to understand how to balance a checkbook, how to fill out a 1040 easy form, how to figure out, you know, how to read your pay stub and understanding what the FICA is, and you know, the incredible, amazing concepts of compound interest and how they work with retirement savings. They're all things that I offered back when, and it just seems that it's difficult for the schools to incorporate them into their curriculums for whatever reasons. I mean, I offered it in Plymouth, I offered it in Middleborough, but the schools didn't seem to be able to get around to sort of fitting this type of a thing in, which I think is critical. So I kept pushing and pushing, and then recently, the Board of Selectmen in Middleborough just jumped on it and were like, this is great. Mark Germain, who is the chairman of the Board of Selectmen in Middleborough, jumped on it and said, this is great. I want to go to it. I want to bring my kids to it. And we should expand it. I mean, it's focused on seniors, seniors in high school, but it's for everybody. I mean, it's I'm not limiting the class because you know how when you used to sit in school, you'd wonder, when am I going to use Euclidean geometry in my daily life?
Sure.
Well, if you have an older person there, somebody like you or I, well, maybe not that old, but somebody older in the class,
yes,
who raises their hand and asks a question relating to this type of thing, relating to a security deposit, relating to maybe, you know, how do you read a profit and loss statement, something like that, the kids are going to see that this is relevant to people outside of school. This is a real life question. It's a real life point of interest that even an adult is having an issue with. So I think there could be some back and forth that's very, very helpful, where adults are as confused about a topic as kids would be.
I just want to interject real quick.
Sure.
Earlier when I had introduced this, you know, you and this particular class that you're going to be doing at the Green Schoolhouse, this is actually going to be from 5:30 to 7 p.m. And yep. I believe this the Green Schoolhouse in Middleborough is the corner of Plimpton and Wood Streets. Is that accurate?
It is, and it was a labor of love that a number of people in town funded and brought back this school, this one-room schoolhouse, to life. And I thought that was just so apropos of what we're trying to do, go back to the basics of learning. And we're going back to a very historical building, which, you know, back when you had the reading, writing, and arithmetic, and that was what you really needed to learn.
So here's the thing that this is reminiscent of. During my time as someone who captures content for local cable, who has provided coverage of events around the South Shore, this was very reminiscent of like a credit for life fair to a degree, where it kind of teaches you this is what your career is going to be, this is what your annual salary is going to be, you're going to need to learn how to accumulate, you know, what is your lease going to be, you know. You want to be able to pay that out. Groceries. Are you going to have enough money in your budget to be able to get a gym membership? What kind of a vehicle do you want? This is very reminiscent of that, this seems as though it's a little bit more. There's more to it.
Well, I mean, it's our world has become much more legalistic. I was going to explain tomorrow, for example, that, you know, in a portion when we're talking about contracts seem to be very complicated things. They're not. When you walk into a grocery store, you're entering into the concept of contract.
Yep.
A contract requires offer, acceptance, and consideration. That's all a contract requires. So you go in to a supermarket and you are in a room full of offers. Buy this for 69 cents. If you don't want to accept the offer, you walk away from it. If you do accept the offer, you take it and you put it in your basket. And then that's accepting the offer. Well, the consideration is what you pay for it. You've now entered a contract. You are in a room full of contracts. And if you look at the world like that, the problem is that some other times you may end up in contracts and you don't even know it. And once you're in a contract, it's hard to get out of them sometimes. It's easy there. You just bring it back and you get a refund. But what if you end up on one of your internet things, you end up clicking something that's an offer, you've accepted it, And built into it, there are penalties if you get out early. So you've got to sort of be thinking as you work through stuff, what am I doing here? What is an offer? What is an acceptance? And am I in a contract? And then when you look at real contracts, because I figure I'll go from there into a lease, a mortgage, a bank credit card agreement, things like that. You know, people don't realize that a lot of the credit card agreements require you to arbitrate instead of going to court. Some of them require you to arbitrate under California law. And you sit there and go, geez, I got to go to California to deal with a credit card issue. But then there's, you know, other laws that say you don't have to do that. So taking young people through that, taking older people through that, is something that, you know, the schools should be doing with our seniors, our juniors and our seniors. And it's something that should have been instilled in them so that when they get older, they go out and they try and find these answers for themselves or know that there are questions that need to be asked. So I just want to fill in, rather than sitting around complaining about what the schools don't teach or complaining about what they do teach, I just want to jump in and start trying to share what information I have with this generation and hope that other people in the community, and many people have come out to support me in terms of saying they would be happy to come and teach something too. I've got someone who wants to teach about insurance. I got someone else who wants to come in and teach about how do you set yourself up for retirement. I got somebody else who wants to come in and teach people how to deal with the W-9s and the forms for employment. So this is hopefully going to become a very community-oriented class where it's not just me teaching it, it's basically the elders or the experience in the community coming in and teaching or sharing information with everybody else so that all boats float. And I'm hoping that I can get some of the young 12 and 15-year-olds to come in and teach the rest of us how to use computers.
Sounds like an interesting concept. Again, if folks are just tuning in, we have a good friend, attorney Adam Bond, who is joining us and discussing a concept, teaching life skills, whether it's contracts, as he's talking about, credit cards, mortgages, things like that. I think that what we need to know here is tomorrow night just going to be a one of, or are you looking to perpetuate this? Like, is this going to be monthly? Is this going to be weekly? How many weeks in a row? Is it going to be a semester? Have you thought beyond that?
Tomorrow is the first class in a whole series of classes that I hope to just make either every Tuesday or every other Tuesday, so two Tuesdays a month, where we pick a topic, or I've actually got a curriculum of things that I want to go through. I want to make sure everybody knows, and if anybody asks or wants to know, I can share the curriculum with them. But I'm also going to be going through this in terms of if somebody's got a topic they want me to veer off onto, I'm more than happy to do that. Because remember, this isn't about me. This is about people coming in and being made comfortable with these elements that will infect their life, so to speak. They need to understand these things. So if somebody came in and I'm in the middle of talking about contracts and they say, well, you know, I'd like to talk about foreclosures at some point, I may say, all right, let me finish with my contracts, and the next class we will come in, I will talk about foreclosures and how that works in Massachusetts so you understand that concept.
I'm surprised, Adam, that you haven't taken this concept to Massasoit Community College. I believe that they have a satellite campus right there in Middleborough.
I did.
This would be an outstanding opportunity. And what were you told?
Well, it's not happening there.
Oh, okay. All right.
They didn't know that it would. They didn't know whether or not it would be an economically sound way of doing things, and whether or not it would draw enough people. And my whole thought was, if you do a free course and you drive young students into a room in Middleborough, you are marketing Massasoit, because the kids have got to go somewhere at some point.
It's very true, and you know, you talk about young people. What's the one thing that that is lacking these days when it comes to understanding government, civics? Is that something that you might delve into as well?
I have no problem with it, and I think the course itself is a lesson in civics.
Yes, it is.
Two, I think I think that it does make some sense that if something comes up during the conversation, I mean, one of the things, one of the topics I have going towards the later end is how to petition your local government. You got a problem. It's got to do with zoning in the town. It's got to do with planning in the town. How do you approach the government? Do you just go in and scream and wave your arms and have a protest? Or is there a methodology by which you do things? And I think explaining that to them, explaining them, not that they have a voice. They all know they have a voice. It's how do you amplify that voice through the proper mechanism? And I think that's really an important thing to teach our youngsters because they've got a lot of things that they're going to have to be fixing and correcting over the next few decades. And I think they need to know the methodology by which to approach this, that it's not just haphazard and burn your bra. It's really, you got to, there's actually methodologies by which, set up methodologies by which you can make your government listen to you.
So whether it's petitioning the right people, the right boards, or even just running for office, right?
Yes. Or writing a letter in the right way. One of the things I've found over the years is the pen is, in fact, mightier than the sword. People just have not been taught how to use the pen. They've been taught how to use their thumbs on texting. And while social media does have its place, no question about that, I could learn a lot of things about social media. There is still, if you can write a full good sentence and put a thought down on paper, you can reach a lot of people in government.
Can we talk?
That's just me.
Can we talk about two sides of a particular issue that you had mentioned earlier? And that is that
sure.
you got pushback from a couple of different educational sources, a community saying, you know, school departments, school systems said, yeah, no, this isn't something that we want to teach. But yet, readily, you had a governing board that said, yeah, this is something that you should. Does it concern you that education isn't willing to expand its boundaries to be able to share information? And is it, do you feel that it's enlightening that your local board of selectmen was willing to at least give you an opportunity to share this information?
Let me first, I don't want to disparage either school system. I think the problem is that with the way they're structured, their little fiefdoms are their little fiefdoms. And I essentially what I'm trying to do creates a lot of static in that little fiefdom. I am happy and actually very honored that the Board of Selectmen in Middleborough, who I have not always gotten along with,
right? That's true.
We know, that we have enough mutual respect for one another to see that on this issue we are both on the same side, and we're both on the same side in the sense and every member of that board said it. This is about making sure that we prepare our children to go forth into the world and have as few surprises as possible. Every member of that board, there was not a single person on that board who was not supportive of the concept. And in fact, every member of that board, and I give nothing but kudos to the Middleborough Board of Selectmen for this, because they heard the concept, they jumped in, and they immediately said, okay, what do you need? And I said, I need a place to do it, and I need a board to write on. We got it for you. What else do you need? Jay McGrail, the new town manager, has been all over this thing. I mean, he's been great. Mr. Foy, who runs the buildings down there, he just called me today. He was helping me set up and figure out the number of chairs. So while the school system may be too busy to focus on this because they've got their own deadlines and their own things to do in both Plymouth and in Middleborough, you know, maybe what this is a sign that, you know, we have to just help ourselves.
And again, if you are tuned in, we are speaking with Adam Bond, a local attorney and someone who's, you know, out there sharing information. You know, when I saw your post, I don't know how far down I went to look through your comments. Has it all been positive feedback that you're hearing from folks? Or have you had any pushback from people saying, maybe you're not the person to do this?
No, nobody's done that yet. And for them to know that that I'm not the person to do it, they have to show up to at least the first day. then they'll be certain of it. But putting that aside, everybody seems to think it's a good idea, and it's not only from Middleborough. There are people from Carver that have jumped in, people from Plymouth that have jumped in. And my hope, my absolute hope is if I can figure out how to get this working right, that each town teaches its own. Just teach your own kids. Don't spend all your time bitching and moaning about what it is your schools are or aren't teaching. Sit down and do what it is you keep saying to the schools, which is, I can teach my kids. I'm going to teach my kids that. So sit down and teach them. Do a free course. Get people together in a room. Your towns all have some place where you can meet. And sit down and have that discussion with your town boards and set up a course, set up a class. At worst, it's adults and kids getting together and seeing that they're not alien to one another.
How many are you expecting? I mean, how many will the green school, how many will a school or the classroom you're being given accommodate? And are you going to be able to handle the overflow?
Okay, here you go. How many do I expect? I expect 3 people. How many am I worried that I may get? I may get more than 40. So I'm not sure. It's a high class problem to have. If there's a huge overflow, I don't know what we're going to do, but we'll figure it out. I don't know. It's the first. Look, have you heard of any people doing this in the state anywhere around?
No. No, not,
so,
not.
I don't know.
Well, Adam, here's the other thing we haven't mentioned, that, and that is this is my favorite four letter word, free, right?
Yes.
And the other thing is that we have touched upon is this isn't something like where there's going to be book work and you have put it out there. This is going to be a laid back type of a learning session.
Yes.
There's no tests. There's no pressure, but all it is just disseminating information to help people better understand things that go on in life, like a credit card, like a mortgage.
And all I am is the facilitator. I am there. I'm going to have a topic I want to talk about. If you want to take me off topic and everybody in the room wants to go off onto that topic, we'll go off on that topic if I know anything about it. Otherwise, what I will do is I will tell you I don't know anything about that topic right this second. I'm going to mark it down. I will come in next time prepared to talk about that topic, just so that we understand each other. And, you know, some people like little flavors. You know, one of the things that somebody asked me was, you know, what kinds of things, do people need to know? And I said, you know, for example, everybody thinks a homestead on your house, you know, protects you from absolutely everything. Well, homesteads get waived every day in credit card agreements. And in fact, under the law, you can waive your homestead, and mortgages waive your homestead. There are a number of things. Somebody can slip something into one of your documents that waives your homestead, and you can waive it. In fact, there are times where courts have opened up homesteads and undone them. People tell you, under the American Airlines case, your credit card, if you lose your credit card, you are liable up to $50, no more, if you report your credit card stolen. That, by the way, was my father's case. He fought that, the American Airlines case. It set a $50 limit. I just had to plug him. On the debit card, on the other hand, all the banks, I know my bank told me, hey, don't worry about it. If it gets used, you get your money back. Don't you worry about it. The law says that if I don't report it, there's a 30-day reporting period and a 60-day reporting period. There are deductibles. So there's they pay me if it's over a certain amount that's stolen within the first 30. They pay me nothing if I don't discover it within 60 days, and I eat it all. People don't know that about their bank cards because people haven't looked up the statute.
Right. And you know, again, the information is there. You just have to seek it out, and this is a perfect opportunity. We have a few more minutes left with Adam Bond. Again, this is going to be a class, as he has said, it'll be on Tuesdays. And it's going to be at the Green Schoolhouse in Middleboro. This is the corner of Plimpton and Wood Streets, 5:30 to maybe 7 p.m. And so the thing I have to ask you is, you know, what did it take for you to put together a little bit of a syllabus on what you're going to offer on a regular basis? And are you ready for tomorrow night, or you get nerves?
Uh, I, I got nerves, but then again, you know, I've been on stage before, I've been in court before, I've been in a number of places before, so that helps drive me. The syllabus has been something I've been working on over the last 4 or 5 years. I've had time. Nobody's wanted to help me do it in a school or a college. So hey. But I also, just so people, I taught it at Massasoit. I taught a business law course there, which is where I got some of the idea for this, because they were young kids from Middleborough. And some of those students still come into me and ask me questions about stuff, because we did the course through the contracts book, which was a great course. It really was fun. And the students did well. That was a graded course, but they still would come into me thereafter, they knew me, and they would come into my office and they would ask me questions about some of the contracts they had to see if they were doing things right. And that's all I'm trying to foster with people, is you ask people. You know, sometimes the worst thing is not knowing the right question to ask. Because once you know the right question to ask, the answer comes easy. So I really just want to give people the working pieces to be able to know when a question needs to be asked and what that question is, because otherwise you stand there baffled, and when you stand there baffled, you have no options. Options get made, choices get made for you. And that's what I want to avoid. I want to avoid a whole generation of people that feel helpless in the face of bureaucracy and in the face of legalities that they may not have ever understood.
Now, if this somebody who is tuned into this segment, as we get ready to wrap up in a few moments, is there a way for anybody who has questions that we haven't already answered? Or maybe there's something I haven't asked you. Maybe you might want to enlighten the folks. But if folks wanted to reach out to you, do you have a way for them to be able to do that, whether it's the email address or just reaching out on Facebook or whatever?
They can reach out on Facebook, or they can reach out at abond@adambondlaw.com. And I want to stress to people, this is not a marketing session. I mean, I've had people that want to come in that want to talk about insurance. This is not one where people are going to hand out cards and here's my card so that I can sell you insurance. This is people coming in to talk to you about insurance and what it is, not, hey, my company sells it, you can buy it. That's not what this is about, and that's not what it's going to turn into either. It's simply, as I said, just trying to make sure people get the bits and pieces they need to be able to make the right choices.
It's just a matter of public service. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I love public service. All of us should do it.
Well, again, we've been speaking with Adam Bond, attorney Adam Bond, talking about his concept of sharing information, doing it freely, and in doing it, if, you know, maybe there might be something on the syllabus, but he's already said that he's willing to kind of deviate from whatever the discussion is if others are willing to kind of engage in that conversation. So I will look forward. I'm going to try to get you back on in maybe a few weeks just for an update as to how things are going with this concept. And maybe this is where we're planting the seed, right? And starting in Middleborough, and maybe there are going to be other communities where there might be leaders, community leaders, who might want to do the very same thing that you're trying to do, Mr. Bond.
You know what? That would be the greatest honor to see that happen, and I think it would be the greatest benefit they could give to their own kids.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining me for a few moments just to kind of share the ideas. And folks, again, if you are interested in doing this, again, he is a little timid if he gets over 40 people, but I think he'll be able to handle it. This is going to be tomorrow night. This is going to be the Green Schoolhouse in Middleborough, corner of Plimpton and Wood Streets. This is starting at 5:30 p.m. Be there or be square. Adam, until our next conversation, which I suspect is going to be soon, best of luck on this endeavor.
Thank you very much.
We are going to step aside for just a couple of moments. When we come back, we're going to talk the news of Patrice Bergeron, a Boston Bruins captain who has decided to hang him up after nearly 19 years wearing the spoked B. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD. Invest your time in listening to CAPE Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. CAPE Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD.
Don't go without a primary care physician. Signature Healthcare is here to support you. There are so many reasons to choose Signature Healthcare for primary and specialty care for you and your family. Signature Healthcare provides trusted referrals to over 17 Signature medical specialties and direct access through their medical affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. You'll have access to their retail pharmacy and urgent care centers, providing you full access to your medical records and the ability to request medication refills through their secure patient portal. Most of all, Signature Healthcare helps you stay on top of your health through regular checkups by top quality physicians and staff. Start a relationship with Signature Healthcare today. For an appointment with a Signature Healthcare primary care physician, call 844-SHC-APPT. That's 844-742-2778. Or email appts@signature-healthcare.org. Find out more at signature-healthcare.org.
Go ahead, indulge yourself every Wednesday night. Tune into the Francesca Luca Show and join me for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration. So sit back and relax, or be stimulated, or both. Because being connected feels good. And who doesn't need more of that these days? Don't miss the Francesca Luca Show Wednesdays at 9 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
And you have arrived at the final segment of Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. And, of course, we saved the best for last. It was kind of sad, a down note, as we learned late last week that Patrice Bergeron will not be returning to the Boston Bruins. Joining me, my guest, to kind of talk about this topic and what will happen with the Boston Bruins for the 23-24 season. He was just on with me just a couple of weeks ago. He and Ben, part of the Causeway Kings, and of course he sports the C on his jersey. He's the captain. Not only does he play hockey, but he also coaches youth hockey. We have Adam Clancy here. Clance, welcome back.
Great to be back. I'm excited to be back here.
And of course, the Mad Dog is in the house. We have him on for special occasions, and knowing that he is a Bruins fan first and foremost, I thought it was warranted. Although I will say that Ben could not make it in this evening, so we called you off of the ninth floor to come on down and sit on the bench and skate with the rest of the team. So
great to not be a healthy scratch for the first time all season.
There you go. So I'll ask each of you your thoughts as to hearing that Patrice Bergeron, number 37, is going to be hanging them up.
I'm like 50-50 on it. All right, I felt like this was going to happen, but then I also felt like it wasn't going to happen. And I felt like it was not going to happen because of all the articles and the interviews I read that he was the main factor in Lucic coming back as a Bruin. So to me, I'm thinking, all right, he's persuading him to come back home where your career started. We'll finish it, one last ride together. But obviously that didn't happen. To me, Bergie is the all-around perfect Bruin. There's no other way to put it. His career speaks for itself, his numbers, his leadership, everything.
Did he deserve to win more than just one cup?
Absolutely he did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. There's no question about it.
I mean, I can think of one goaltender, if he hadn't soiled himself, if you didn't lose a forward to a head injury, a concussion, Mark Savard, you might have had a chance to win the year prior to the Bruins hoisting the cup. What do you think, Matt?
They should have had that one.
That was a softball, because I know how much of a fan you are of number 40.
Oh, absolutely. He's one of my air quote favorite goaltenders of all time. He's one of the greatest regular season goaltenders of all time. I'll give him that. But I'm honestly not surprised Bergie hung him up. you know, I was talking about it with a group of friends about a month ago, and I said, Marchand was spotted at photo day with a C on a sweater. That doesn't just happen. So I kind of got the feeling when I saw those reports that the Bruins were prepared to move on as an organization. And then it was just formally announced last week. And here we are. I think Marshy's, not to tease a different part of the conversation.
I was going to say, you already primed the pump and kind of went into the segue. Now, folks can't see it because radio is not a visual medium. But Adam is shaking his head that he doesn't think so. And prior while we were in break, Adam kind of gave a theory as to what he thinks is going to happen next season.
This is the way I look at it. Marshy's got, I think, 2 years left in his deal. He's 37 years old. He just had double hip surgery.
Yeah.
He had a great year. Don't get me wrong. He was down.
He was slower, though.
Down number-wise.
Yeah.
You know, those hip surgeries that he had are no joke. I know multiple D1 pro players have had those surgeries, and their careers have ended because of them.
Well,
I don't think he's at a point in his career where he can take on a full leadership role as a captain. I just don't think he's going to be here long enough. Pasta, he's too much of a goofball to be a captain. I just think he is. I'm looking at someone like a Charlie McAvoy, who just signed a massive ticket. He's here for years upon years. Mm-hmm. He's young. And look out in the rest of the NHL, right? A lot of these teams are having younger and younger captains. You know, it got leaked out the other day that Clayton Keller, who's been in the league shorter than McAvoy, is now going to be named the new captain in Arizona. He's only 23, 24. So, Marchand, I love him to death. I just don't think he has any, you know, enough tread on the tires to take on a C for another year or two. I just don't.
Even though he's sporting the A now.
So is Imposter and McAvoy.
That's true. What do you think? Do you think that Clance is onto something?
I think it's going to be Marshy for the bridge of the end of his deal. And then he'll probably end up hanging him up. And then at that point, I could see McAvoy taking over.
Now, they wouldn't do anything silly like give it to Luch, would they?
That would just be stupid.
Okay.
I'm half expecting Luch to be a healthy scratch 50% of the time.
I think Luch is going to be like Jerome McGinley. Come out playing a lot and then healthy scratch here and there, or even like Foligno, healthy scratch.
So let's kind of delve into this. I mean, what are some of your most memorable moments during the time that number 37 was out there skating, whether he was healthy or sporting a broken rib? I mean, the guy always played hurt. God bless him. Matt?
Yeah, I mean, of course, Game 7 against Toronto comes to mind back in 2013.
Yeah.
I will always admire him for playing through a couple of broken ribs, a punctured lung, and a separated shoulder in the Stanley Cup Final in 2013 against Chicago, which the aforementioned goaltender, you know, did his business in the crease.
Good boy.
But I could see, I mean, if it wasn't for Pavel Datsyuk, he would have had 10 Selke trophies over the course of his career. That's just ridiculous number. He's the greatest defensive forward of all time.
I mean, to narrow down one memorable moment, I don't think it's possible.
It's tough. Yeah, it's tough.
You know, I got to say, you know, everybody remembers, I think it was against Philly when he took that hit from behind and he was out cold, unconscious, didn't know what was going on. He missed, I don't even remember how long. And to come back from a hit like that and go on and have the career you had after that, to me, that's a memory of like the guy that overcame everything. You know, yeah, talking about, you know, playing with a punctured lung and the broken ribs and all that. And obviously you can, you know, to get cheesy and be like, you know, memory of him hoisting the cup and all that. But to me, coming back from an injury like that and being the most effective player in the league for years upon years, that's huge.
Probably one of the most respected hockey players as well.
Oh, 1,000%.
Yeah.
He played the game the right way. He played a solid 200-foot game. There's a reason why he's won 6 Selkies. He was respected amongst all his peers throughout the entire league. Not one person has one bad thing to say about him.
Is he an easy Hall of Famer, or is it a matter where you have to wait a few years for it to, you know, go through the process? Do you feel that he will easily be a candidate for the NHL Hall of Fame? Matt?
The Hockey Hall of Fame is notoriously tough to get into. They only induct 4 or 5 players every year out of the 800 or
top
so
of the Major League Baseball.
Absolutely. Do I think he'll get there one day? Yes. If he was able to get a couple more cups, he'd be probably first ballot. Mm. But
all right, so then let me ask you this. Henrik Lundqvist, who retired 3 years ago, just got inducted. He has 0 cups.
I think that's the committee starting to loosen up a little bit.
Former players that should be in that aren't in. Alexander Mogilny. How is that guy not in the Hockey Hall of Fame?
Right.
It's insane. Do I think Bergeron's going to get in? Yeah, probably. I would say within the next 2 to 4 years he'll be in.
But I think Hall of Fames are popularity contests and political at best. I mean, we've seen, you know, great baseball players who get passed over because of how they were with the media, mm-hmm. How they were with the fans.
They're off the field, extracurriculars.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe their numbers weren't up to snuff as to what maybe some of those who
I don't think there's any part of Bergeron's game that would deny him the Hall of Fame. I think winning 6 Selkies is an NHL record. His points are phenomenal. Over 1,000 games.
Yep.
Stanley Cup champion. I don't think there's anything holding back from him going up to the Hall of Fame.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about Patrice Bergeron calling it a career after 19 years. We got Adam Clancy, Causeway Kings podcast, and Mad Dog Nelson, local announcer and Bruins sports aficionado, talking about this. You know, now that we've seen 2 centermen leave the Bruins, and Bergeron and Krejci will not return.
Krejci's not retiring, though. He's just going back to the Czech
Republic. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but doesn't he, the team he's playing for, doesn't he? Like half ownership in that.
He's like a third owner or something like that. Yeah. He's like the new Yaga.
So you're going to play the league. You're like 50,
70.
All right. That's cool. But all right. So you've lost those 2 players. I mean, there's a chance that maybe Krejci comes back later in the year. Maybe, you know, once his team is eliminated from postseason play. But what do the Bruins do in the meantime? I mean, they got limited cap resources. And I think a lot of the players that they a lot of veteran minimum signings. That doesn't make me as a fan warm and cozy. There was no, you know, but there, if you look at the free agent market, as we discussed a couple of weeks ago here on Monday Night Talk, you can hear that podcast on go to the homepage and check out Monday Night Talk, the podcast, download it. But what do you guys think? I mean, do you feel that this team is going to be competitive? I mean, it's definitely going to be a 180 from what we saw a year ago. Matt?
I think that they are so, how do I say this politically correct, screwed cap-wise. These things come in waves.
Yeah, they get dead money. They get dead money on the books because of last year.
Absolutely. Every 6 or 7 years or so, they get into the situation where they'll load up for a cup run and then the next summer just be in absolute hell and be losing multiple free agents. It happened after 2014. It happened just after 2019. Here we are in 2023. They did the same thing. We also lost Taylor Hall, signed elsewhere.
No, so, he goes traded.
He traded.
Well, traded.
He traded, and you had Bertuzzi, who was – he signed with the Leafs.
So we're – now losing like our complete top 6 forward group, and is
Charlie Coyle
as good as the Providence Bruins were last year? The top 2 lines from them are not major league level ready to take on what the 3rd and 4th lines for the NHL Bruins.
Mm-hmm. It's tough to say because you know a year ago at this time. We were sitting here saying Bruins aren't even going to make the playoffs. They're going to, they're in a rebuild. They're not going to do anything. And they brought back Bergeron and Krejci. Great.
A wagon.
But they were not a wagon. I mean, they were a wagon.
In the regular season.
Exactly.
And not where then
the playoffs, that's when, you know, they joined the two.
They were the Kansas City Chiefs of the 90s.
You know, so, you know, looking back at what they did this year, yes, historical season, 90% of Bruins fans were probably like, before the season started, this is no way this is ever going to happen. You know, yeah, you lose Bridge, you lose Krejci down the middle, absolutely. You have Coyle, you have Zaka. You know, I think they might still make some moves, but, you know, you freed up all that cap space, $6+ million getting rid of Riley, buying him out. Hall, they traded away. What they need to do is they need to stop signing these AHL lifers to these two-way contracts for, you know, $750,000, because you sign three or four of those guys, okay, there goes almost half your cap space you have left, and go out and, you know, yeah, get a seasoned veteran that can still play, be effective, and then next year when all the top free agents are there, then you make your splash.
But see, that's the thing that's being teased right now is that, you know, next year there's going to be a lucrative amount of cap space that the Bruins will have. I think this was kind of a down year across the league, but like a lot of teams did not have sufficient cap space. Mm-hmm. But that we'll see a little bit more expansion of the cap space, and that you might have a better selection of free agents. So you get to wait a year.
I mean, I agree with him. Down in the AHL, there's really not a whole lot down there. I mean, yeah, okay, you've got Fabian LaSalle. He's not NHL ready. I'm still calling it to this day. He's a first round bust. He's not doing anything down there. You got John Beecher, who, you know, was a first round pick, was this highly touted prospect from Michigan, and each year he was there, his point production went down and his line went down. He started on the first line and slowly worked his way down to the fourth line.
Right.
I saw him play a few months ago when the season was still going on, and he was invisible on the ice. Now, during camp last year, or this past season, he was very noticeable. So maybe there's your fourth line center, where he, you know, he doesn't have to log 15+ minutes a game. You play him 6 to 9 minutes a game, get him the experience, and work with what you have. I mean, again, you got Coyle in the middle, who is, my opinion, is probably one of the top five third line centers in the NHL. You got Zaka, who is a very good second line center. DeBrusk can play center as well. He's more effective as a winger,
right,
but can play center as well. I don't think they're going to do what they did this year, but I don't think they're in a full rebuild mode.
But see, I kind of feel as though they're doing what other Boston teams are doing. Look at the Patriots. Look at the Red Sox. They're middle of the pack. They're middling. They're around 500. That's what the Patriots have been the past couple of seasons. You know, the game under 500, game over, a couple games over, just make the playoffs, get eliminated and killed by Buffalo. The only team right now that is, you know, contention and that it could be competing for a championship is the Celtics. It's a sad state of affairs, seeing that we got spoiled for 20+ years around here, you know, with championships. I mean, look at Mad Dog. Mad Dog, you know, from the day he was born, every other year they were, no, I'm kidding, he's not that young. But those who are,
you know, no, I got a small dose of it. The first 8 or 9 years of my life, it was
parade.
I thought we were cursed. I didn't know what a parade was, and then all of a sudden they all hit in the early 2000s.
But
I think that also factored into Bergeron's decision, because it's a clear gap year. I mean, just going into seeing how many openings we have with how much cap space they have, I don't think they're going to make it to the conference final, let alone make a run at the cup. And does Bergeron really want to put his body through that again to maybe have a run the year after? Now he's committing to another 2 years, and he's already very well busted up.
Definitely interesting. Again, if you're just tuning in, you're tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD with Adam Clancy and Matt Nelson, and we're talking the demise of the Boston Bruins. I shouldn't say demise, because, again, Clance said it so eloquently earlier. Look at last year. At this same time, I think many of us were looking, going, You know, you're not going to have Marchand. McAvoy was having issues. What is this team going to be look? What is it going to look like? Will it even make it into the playoffs? And they did, but they didn't last beyond the first.
Let me ask you this: you think Bergeron would have stayed for another year if they went deeper into the playoffs?
I think so.
I think he would have.
I think so. And I think that's why it was. But here's the thing, though. You know, he got injured playing in Montreal. Why? Because he wanted to play for his dad, right?
And that's the thing is everyone's like, oh, he never should have played, never should have played. Let me ask you this. If your father's dying wish is watch you play one more game in a famous arena, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
There's no ifs, ands, buts about it. And if people are going to think he's wrong for doing that, then you're just idiots. I'm sorry. It's Bergeron. It's his father. Like, that's what his father wanted. That's what he did. Yeah, it's unfortunate that he ended it with, you know, what a very bad back injury. But it's his father's wish.
Okay.
You know, I could see him lacing him up for Team Canada and maybe make a run at the next Olympics for, like, his final run as a professional hockey player. A little bit less of a load than the NHL regular season, of course. Less games.
But he's been there, done that, hasn't he?
He has, but he also said that, you know, that's the only real jersey that he ever wanted to wear was Team Canada.
Yeah, which he's done multiple times, won multiple gold medals at the World Juniors, at the Olympic level. I don't think he really has anything to prove on that standpoint.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I did read something the other day that they are in talks of possibly letting NHL players back into the Olympics.
Interesting. Anything we want to touch upon in closing in regards to the Bruins, the news of Berge hanging them up? Matt?
Hold your breath for next year when they've got so many tens of millions in cap space.
Yeah, but it's signing the right players. And it's not like they're going to be able to draft. Are they going to be without draft picks, the first-round draft picks? Here's the thing. I shouldn't even ask that because even when they have, I mean, look at when they had
that magical draft.
That magical draft where they had, was it 13, 14, 15? Or was it 14, 15?
13, 14,
15. And who came out of that?
DeBrusk.
That was it.
And they could have had Matt Barzal, Sebastian Aho.
Brock Besser.
Brock Besser.
Wasn't Zboril one of those two? Oh, no.
No.
I'm thinking
it was Senishin.
Sasinchin.
Yeah, who they loved. Stanika, they hung on to him.
Stanika and DeBrusk.
Okay. It was Stanika? Did he get traded? He's somewhere.
Yeah, Stanika got traded. He's in Vancouver, I think.
Yeah, but he's just above being an AHL
Sweeney
player.
He doesn't know how to draft.
He doesn't.
And I brought this up last time I was on, where if you look at the entire staff of the Bruins, Montgomery excluded, everybody that's on the scouting staff and the coaching staff has been a Bruin from a player to a coach. I love the Bruins. I'm a hometown fan, but it's like a little cult, right? It's like, stop bringing in PJ Axelsson is your European head scout. Like, he was terrible.
Mm.
So what
would he know about talent?
It's nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing except how to do your hair really well. But you need to stop bringing people from outside the organization. That's a different voice. You could have went out and brought in John LeClair.
But is that a matter of dollars, or is it just a matter of just you want to stick with an old boy?
Money
club?
Doesn't matter to these guys because they've already made millions and millions playing.
That's right. Then how do you bring in? Is it just a matter of the system?
Stop from the top.
Maybe get rid of I hate to say it, but do you get rid of a Cam Neely? You get rid of the president of the club? And along with the GM and start over?
I wouldn't get rid of Neely. I'd get rid of Sweeney in a heartbeat. He's the one that makes the final decisions.
All right, but who's the one who says, this is what my scouting staff is? Who's the one who assembles the scouting staff, makes the changes? Is it strictly Sweeney? I think
Sweeney has the final say.
Okay. But if Cam's like, hey, I like PJ Axelsson, keep him. Don't get rid of him. Well, then what do you do?
Slap him. I'm sorry. No. It's just look at Adam McQuaid, right? This guy, he was a tough,
SOB.
Tough SOB.
Yep.
Had a great NHL career, wasn't even expected to become an NHL player, know, he did his job. He was a fighter. He's a great bottom 2D. But now he's like the director of your player development.
Yeah.
Like, what's he going to, like,
standing everyone, for the alumni.
Everyone knows that fighting is most likely going to be out of the game very soon.
Yeah. That's a European type of hockey.
Known for is being a tough, rugged, physical defenseman.
Right.
Now in the NHL, if a defenseman sneezes on a forward on a one-on-one and getting a penalty,
yeah.
You know, but it's like, that's just the stuff like, you know, it's just, I don't like what they have in there from a scouting and coaching staff standpoint, but that's just me.
Okay. Matt?
See, I think I disagree with you. I think Cam Neely has his hand in 75% of the decisions, and I think he is the one who has to go. Mm-hmm.
But again, people love number eight. People love Cam. You know, you talk about Cam, who, you know, he's, you know, he skated during an era where, you know, most of the times the Bruins had one top line, and if they were able to make it into the Cup Finals, you shut down that line, you shut down the Bruins. You know what I mean? They had that great goalie tandems, but you shut down that one top line, you're able to neutralize a Bork, you win the Cup. That's just my thoughts.
Let me ask you this. What do you think they do right now regarding the goalie situation? I know we touched on this earlier.
We did. We you know, before we came on the air, we were talking about Swayman and Allmark. What do you do? I would trade him. I'd hate to trade Swayman. He's a young guy. But you're right now invested in Allmark, right? You got another 2 years on his contract. He just won a Vezina, right?
3 years on his contract.
Is it 3 years?
They signed him for 5 years, yeah.
Okay, I thought it was a 4 year. My bad. But, you know, you I'm sure you can have somebody you can bring up from, you know.
Don't even say bring someone up from AHL. All right, please.
All right, then you give me an answer.
All right, so Swayman has already requested a trade. Okay. He wants to be closer to home. He's from Anchorage, Alaska.
Who's the kid? Kincaid? Was that who they – did they re-sign him?
Keith Kincaid?
Yeah.
No, they –
But they traded him.
They just re-signed Kaiser.
Okay.
But – so he wants to be closer to home. Okay, so Winnipeg, there you go. Hellebuck wants out of Winnipeg. Okay. Vezina winning goalie, playoff winning goalie.
He played for UMass Lowell.
He's already got paid. He's already said he's not re-signing long-term in Winnipeg.
Is there anybody out there that Hudobin or someone or Halak? I mean, is
any Hudobin's not even in the NHL anymore?
I'm just saying, is there anybody like that out there that you can bring in that is kind of on their last skate that will give you 15 games, 20 games, just to kind of give Allmark a rest?
Why bring in a seasoned veteran like that who's been beat up and hurt already when you can just keep Swayman, who's young and in shape?
And this is why he wears the C on his jersey here on Monday Night Talk. Adam Clancy and Mr. Matt Nelson. Anything you want to say in closing, Mr. Nelson?
Like I said, bridge year, hopefully for multiple of the teams. And next year we're hosting four trophies and going to four parades.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm not feeling it. I feel that right now we are, when it comes to professional sports, we're kind of in a lull. And I think the Bruins have fallen in that lull. Hopefully the Celtics don't.
Kind of in a lull. What do you mean?
We are in a lull. How's that? Jesus. Don't you want to hear? We are in a lull. If folks want to hear your podcast, how can they do that?
Just go on the Apple Podcast, search Causeway Kings, and you'll find us there.
There he is. And Matt, anything you want to say in regards to anything else that you're working on?
No, go Hill. Go Green Wave as we're about to enter fall sports.
I can.